Hi, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Elster. And today we have our first guest on the podcast. Coming to you from Trek Movies Shuttle Pod Podcast, it's Matt Wright.
Well, hi guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming, Matt. We are going to review the season finale of Lower Decks, which we're very excited about. But first, there was so much news coming out of Comic-Con today that we've got a lot to talk about. So let's start with the big one, right, guys?
Oh, it's big.
I've been so excited all day.
So first of all, kudos to us for almost getting this right, because we did predict Prodigy news was coming.
Yes.
But we didn't know what it was. We were thinking it might have been a trailer, and it wasn't that, but it maybe was even better.
It was.
I'd say it's better.
I'm so excited.
For Voyager superfan, Laurie Ulster, who lost it when I told her for the first time. Kate Mulgrew from Star Trek Voyager will be reprising her role as Captain Catherine Janeway in Star Trek Prodigy.
Oh my God. I totally lost it. I've been working really hard on this freelance project all day, and I just kept like stopping to do cartwheels. I was so excited. It's ridiculous. So she did this great video where she talked about how they said she's going to be starring. That was the word they used.
Yep.
Oh my God.
So she's the captain it's the same plot we've heard before. A bunch of kids find a ship and go off in search of adventures and finding themselves and discovery. And she's their captain, I guess.
Well, no, we don't know that. We just know that she reprises the role of Janeway.
Well, she talks about how she was proud to be the first captain, female captain, and now she's the first captain for kids. Maybe she was speaking.
She means
about
the metaphorically. Yeah, she means about the show
and Nickelodeon. Yeah, I can see that.
Because the entire point is these are like rogue teams doing their own thing. I just assume that at some point they're going to encounter her, and she may become sort of a nemesis / mentor. You know, because like they don't want to, they have to reject her initially.
I would like a nemesis / mentor.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of thing.
There are a lot of questions. I mean, this is great news, but there's a lot of. This does confirm that this is going to take place in the 24th century, probably. Yep. We didn't actually know that before.
Yep.
It's a little unclear. Well, first of all, we don't know if this is going to ever be considered canon. My bet is it might not be, but maybe.
Oh, I think it will be. I think you can't have her in it and have it not be canon.
Yeah, you're probably right, except, well, then right off the bat, we've got some weirdness going on, because Captain Janeway, well, maybe this is set before Voyager then.
Right, that's it. We don't quite know when. It could be before that.
Because it's animated, it can be her at any time.
Right.
So, Laurie, you're the Voyager superfan. When did Catherine Janeway become a captain?
Oh. That I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Well, I would also like to point out there's another interpretation, which is that they're using the word captain colloquially because that's how people know her in the role, and that is not actually her rank or in this series.
Right. People don't think of her as Admiral Janeway.
Right.
Right.
She could be Admiral. She could not actually even be Captain. She could be Commander. You know what I mean? Like on some earlier mission. Like, we don't really know.
Yeah. So. And there was no imagery. We don't know what the show looks like, except
that
for the
bummed
logo.
Me out the most. They really should have shared something.
This is inside baseball stuff, but when you get the press release, there's a little link and it says click here for imagery. And I was so excited and I click it and it's the, it was the logo and her headshot. And I'm like, damn it. So yeah. I totally thought I was going to get the first look and nothing.
No.
But it was still very exciting to get the news. And what's interesting is you recently in May spoke to Kate Mulgrew.
I did.
And the previous May, and the idea of her returning to the role of Janeway came up, did it not?
It most certainly did. I mean, it came up because I brought it up. But yes. So the first time I spoke to her, which was very exciting, I'm just going to keep saying that because I love her. We were talking about Picard, and I asked her how she would feel about doing something with Janeway 20 years later, because Picard takes place 20 years later, 20 years after Nemesis. So I asked her about if she was interested in that and if she'd thought about it. So why don't we just hear the clip of her talking about that?
Okay, I have one last Star Trek question for you. I don't know if you're following that they're doing, I mean, Patrick Stewart's doing a new show. He's playing Picard 20 years after the events of the movie Nemesis, which you were also in. Mm-hmm. And what interested him about it was that it was this exploration of what he's done and who he is 20 years after all of this. So if they decided, if someone said to you the character of Janeway 20 years later, what about that character would you want to explore and where do you think she would be?
I did it on Voyager. I played at the Admiral. I did it. I think I did it. I don't know. I really... It surprised me when Patrick came out on the stage. I was there that day and announced it. It surprised me that he'd wanted to. But I think he knows it will probably have a shot at being quite a hit. And there's no one who likes to work as much as Patrick Stewart. So... I think somebody probably came to him with that idea, or he went to them with the idea, and it just caught fire. And for him, it will probably be very successful. Picard was beloved. Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know what to say about Janeway. You know, 7 years is a long time to play a character. Yeah. I'm not sure that she would enjoy resuscitation. She was a very, very vibrant person while she was.
So that doesn't sound like something you would enjoy particularly.
I would have to cross that bridge when I got there. It's nothing that I have entertained.
So at that time, she hadn't entertained it, and I believe her. Mm-hmm. But a year later, I spoke to her again, and she was even more delightful, just saying. And I asked her again if she had had some time to think about it. So this time, she had a slightly different but still carefully worded answer. So let's hear that one.
When we talked about it, I'd asked if you had ever thought about like what Janeway would be doing in 20 years or what you would want to explore with her. And at the time you hadn't thought about that much. Have you thought about it at all since? Like where you would like to see her or what would be interesting?
It's just only because people ask me about it all the time. Since
right.
I started to stream. When are you coming on? When are you coming back? When are we get Janeway on it? Or when Janeway have her own series? Blah, blah, blah. I think it could be, and then somebody actually created a, what would you call it, Lori, on the web, an idea of what I would look like. And it was actually quite stunning when I saw it. I think it would be wonderful to explore Janeway's continued love of adventure and perhaps even love of power. So there are any number of things that you know could be delicious to dip into, but you know I don't think it's going to happen. So I mean I'm not saying that summarily, but time's a wasted. Do you know?
So at this point, she definitely knew that she was doing something, and she found a way to answer my question as specifically and live action focused as possible, I think.
Yes, I think so too, yeah.
Yeah.
During the event today, she said she's already started recording, I think on episode four already, or she's gotten four scripts, I forget, but they're...
She said she had four scripts and that she'd started recording and that it was really fun.
Yeah, so but she's known for a year, I think she said, or close to a year, something like that.
Well, and that's about right, because they have to develop the show and, you know, get it going and start animating it, and start everything.
Yeah, so she definitely knew when she told you that. So she was for sure answering as live action and not as animation.
Mm-hmm.
But,
which is, you know, smart.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what all us old fogey Star Trek fans do now, because I think a lot of Star Trek fans were like, well, it's the kid show. There's lots of Star Trek. Do I really need to watch the kid show and Nickelodeon? But now that Kate Mulgrew's in it, I think some, you know, old Star Trek fans are going to be checking out this show.
Well, that's why it's such a smart move, right? Because they want to get kids interested in Star Trek. And so this is a way to make sure that parents are going to want to introduce their kids to it.
Yep.
It's a definitely. Pretty much a guarantee that you would have your kids watch it with you because you want to watch it too.
Right. If you were a teenager yep. in the 90s, right, you are a parent now.
Correct. And that's exactly when, that's exactly what Alex Kurtzman was saying, you know, to this morning.
Yeah. So I think it's a very good move. And yeah. I still want to know, there was one tiny little bit in the press release, which a lot of people didn't notice, which is they're going to announce more casting mm-hmm. news, quote, soon, I think. So even though we didn't get a lot of Prodigy, we got one big, huge, interesting thing, but nothing else. But more stuff is coming. This show's coming in 2021. I still think it's the next thing after Discovery, which sure. wraps up in, like, what, the first week of January.
Although, well, that's what I think soon in their mind means is like, hey, sometime in the new year, they'll start to release like yeah. more info on it, you know?
Although we still don't know what the next thing will be on Paramount Plus, which is the new name for CBS All Access, because this Nickelodeon show will not be on Paramount Plus slash CBS.
Right. Right. So. At least not for a while.
You know, this announcement made me think about, well, 100 things, but two in particular. One is I can't imagine how great it would have been as a kid to have a show with a character like Captain Janeway on it.
Yep.
Like there was no one like her on TV when I was watching TV as a kid. So that's exciting to me. Except I don't have any little kids. Mine are too big. But that sounded very exciting. And then I suddenly had a thought like, you know, you could do animated Captain Proton in there and give, you know, Garrett and Robbie their dream.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah.
They absolutely could. That's like the right platform for it.
Yeah, there you go.
Uh-huh. if this is set after Voyager, then
it's perfect for it.
You're opening a huge door for all sorts of fun. So
all the people, in theory, could kind of roam through.
Not just Voyager people. I mean, just
no, but especially, you know, Voyager. But yeah,
anyway. I mean, you know, Jonathan Frakes will eventually have to show up, right?
I think so. Yeah,
I think that's a Star Trek rule.
Yeah, I think that's a new rule for sure.
Yeah. Well, before we move on to the next topic, which is going to be Lower Decks, I don't know if there's many of you out there, but if you listen to the news segments before and skip the reviews because you haven't seen the episodes yet, we're going to be getting into spoilers now because the panel covered spoilers. So we can't talk about New York Comic Con without covering Lower Decks spoilers. So stop listening if you haven't seen the finale. All right, here we go.
And then come back later and listen. Don't forget that part. Yeah.
After you've seen. Okay. Right. So it was another Lower Decks panel that these guys love each other. It was a fun thing to watch. But there was a little bit of season 2 news, and it's picking up on everything that happened, which we're going to talk about later in the finale. And what I liked about it is they made it clear they're not going to be doing a reset. So what we see at the end of the episode will be picked up in season 2, which is Boimler is going to be on the Titan, and at least to start with.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a new security officer, and Jax is definitely dead. And that's very sad, but they're, you know, they are holding on and moving on, not just resetting. And Frakes will be back at least once, right? Because if Brad's there, Frakes is there.
There's at least a cameo from the captain there, yeah.
Frakes joined the panel, and that was a lot of fun. And we'll talk about this later, about how Frakes felt a little different. And, you know, the panel kind of revealed how that was pretty much Mike giving Jonathan a free pass to, you know, jazz it up. And
to be more Jonathan and less Riker.
Right.
Really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I'm not sure there's much else to say. It's, you know, all that stuff is on the site and you can watch the panel, but we don't know when season 2 is coming, except that they're already working on it. I think it may be the next thing we see in 2021 on All Access.
Yeah, right? That's my assumption too.
I would guess summer 2021 if I had to make a prediction. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, maybe, or maybe even sooner because they just don't have anything else live action ready yet.
Even though Prodigy was the big news, it really was a bonus feature at the end. It was really a double-barreled panel, Lower Decks Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
And the Discovery part started with a clip, which is the first 2 minutes. I assume everyone listening has seen it, but if you haven't, stop and watch it on the site.
It. Yeah.
It just picks up like immediately after season two, right?
Which is kind of what I expected, that it would just be like, boom, she comes through the wormhole and there we are, you know, kind of thing. So,
and that's their, I mean, they did that between the first and second season also.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it looked great. Lots of action, you know, not a lot of dialogue. Actually we did get some interesting dialogue with Book and some weird alien.
Yeah, he's being chased or whatever.
No, and he had a bit of a Han Solo vibe to me.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
I absolutely agree with that.
Okay, a lot of one. I thought you guys were going to be like, what are you talking about?
No. He's very much so. I agree.
Including the ship with the kind of asymmetric, because the Millennium Falcon is slightly asymmetric.
That's kind of a hunk of junk, maybe. And, yeah.
Right.
And he's and handsome.
Fact, yep, he's good looking. He's
really good looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
His ship. We did our usual trailer analysis a few weeks ago, and his ship was in the trailer, and we didn't notice because it looked like a piece of Star Trek. We didn't know,
yeah. It's true. It was just among a debris field, and we were like, oh, it's just another piece of Starship debris.
Because it's so weirdly shaped. Now we know the answer to a question we've been pondering, which is there's a moment in the trailer where they're looking into the shuttle bay, and there's some kind of ship in there, and it now seems pretty apparent that that's book.
Because we spent some time kind of racking our brain going, that's a really weird looking thing. What is that? You know?
Right. It's hard to tell. Like, is it in the shuttle bay or through the... Anyway, so it's Book's ship. They crash land on a planet, both of them. So it looks like Michael causes Book to crash, right?
Yeah, because she like bounces off of him, you know, and all that.
And then she goes flying out of control and has to reboot.
Nothing like rebooting your suit.
Yeah. I mean, didn't they just put that suit together at the last minute? I mean, that thing can't really be that reliable at this point.
No, right? I think it's kind of rigged, yeah.
I don't think that suit's going to last very long.
I would agree with that. I bet you it doesn't.
Well, because it's essentially... you know, it's too powerful, right?
Right, that's right. But yeah, the narrative structure means that it can't last long.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it maybe we're seeing the last gasp of that suit right there, maybe.
But that's quite a gasp, it looks like. Pretty intense.
Yeah, but she makes it, obviously.
She does. And I like that her, you know, the intensity of what's going on with her is already turned up to 11 in the first minute.
Yeah,
which is good. Show, I think,
well, that's Burnham's life for you.
That's Burnham's life, and I happen to think Cynic was great at those scenes when she gets to go full on. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now there was a full on Discovery panel with the cast and the two showrunners. Not a lot of big news. A lot of stuff we heard at the Star Trek Day panel, which was pretty revelatory. So a lot of that stuff was kind of gone over again.
Yep.
They got a little specific on something we talked about before. Someone asked why this time period, and I've joked they just, you know, looked at Memory Alpha and just said, "What's the last date Memory Alpha?"
Oh yeah, well, and I mean it's logical. So
and Michelle Paradise basically said that she said, there was some. She called it what did she say? Time travel-y stuff.
Enterprise. I think that's what she called it. Yeah, time travel-y stuff.
Yeah, which is all that Daniel stuff, and they okay, let's do it. What it's like 100 years after that.
Yep, exactly. They did one century further than we've ever seen.
And she said they wanted. It's weird. Like, and she said they want a blank slate, but they're not ignoring all of that stuff. So they're still trying to balance canon, obviously.
Right.
There's just a hell of a lot less of it immediately. You know, there.
Yeah,
they won't be so bogged down by it. So I think that this gives them some freedom that they've desperately needed.
Yeah, they won't be running into it. They could choose when they want to run into it.
Yeah.
You know, so if they want something to be there, it's there. Otherwise, they'll do something new.
Mm-hmm.
But they are way in the future, and this is all. This has been a little bit of an issue of, I mean, just compare the 23rd to the 24th century. And so Alex talked a little bit about the technology we'll be seeing. And he said that was a little bit of an issue with them of like, what do you do in the 32nd century?
Yeah.
And I'm still unclear what he means, but he talks about how the technology will be evolved and grounded. So it doesn't appear magical and they won't be defying the laws of physics. But I would like to see some just crazy it's 800 years, 900 years. I mean,
yeah, I want to see some good new technology. And I do want it to make sense, which, you know, Discovery has lacked a lot of sense.
They have a lot of problems in that.
They have some very weird, like phasers that are really loud when they're loaded and things like that.
How about, the Marvel? I mean, essentially the Marvel superhero suit of the Red Angel is just out of place in and of itself.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yep.
So we don't have answers there, but it's obviously something that they're weighing.
Yeah. Which is good.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. What else in the panel did you guys pick up that you thought was interesting?
Well, I thought it was interesting that somebody kind of, I thought it's so funny. Like, the panel moderator is really into it. And so she was like basically asking if maybe like Saru gets some in this season, which is really funny. And I was like, So, I don't know. Saru deserves love too, you know? And like Doug, you know, good old Doug Jones, did wink to everyone. So I don't know what to make of that, but
I got the sense that there's a love interest, but not a love connection, maybe?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. Saru's life is so lonely. He's the only Kelpian.
I know. I want him to meet somebody nice. I like that idea.
I get the sense, you know, maybe he does. Maybe it's someone we already know. Maybe him and Georgiou. You know, who knows?
Ew, no.
I said somebody nice, Tony.
I know. Come on. Not a homicidal like maniac from an alternate universe.
Who's killed a whole lot of people on purpose for fun? Yeah.
Hey, it's a whole new century, man. People change.
maybe they're just pretending that it's Michael in book, but really it's Saru in book.
Okay,
I just made that up, but that's not how.
Yeah,
but that's there's going to be some weird fan theories now. Look what you just heard.
Lord's already shipping.
Yeah, exactly. Shipping some people.
The panel also had our two new actors, which is Blue DeBarrio and Ian Alexander.
Yep.
Who we still don't know a lot about, but. The one new thing was Ian was talking about auditioning and revealed that he didn't say he auditioned for Adira, but it makes sense that he did. And he said he didn't get the role, but then they created this character. So reading between the lines, they created a character, Adira. They auditioned people and then they liked Ian and created another character, Gray, for Ian, and then made these two characters like the best of friends, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And we know that Gray is a Trill, and they never say if a deer is a Trill, but when Blue talked about the research they did, they said Trill was part of the research. So that could mean that Adira is friends with the Trill and needed to understand that. Here's my crazy theory. Adira is a half Trill, a spotless Trill. That's what I'm thinking. What do you guys think?
Well, could Adira be one of the people who takes care of symbionts but isn't joined?
Oh, yes. There you go.
Well, But those, I think they're called Guardians. Sure. Or they were.
Thank you.
They were still Trill, though.
They were Trill, yeah.
Right.
And they were somewhat telepathic.
Right, because they could communicate with them.
Yeah. So, the Adira is definitely connected to the Trill. We just don't know exactly how, but I still think it's quite possible Adira becomes a Dax. Or Gray.
All right.
Interesting.
We don't know.
All right.
Anything else jump at you? There was a fun story with David Ajala talking about how Patrick Stewart introduced him to Star Trek when they worked together at the Royal Shakespeare Society. Fun story. Nothing to do with season 3.
That's pretty cool.
Just, you know, a great Brit action together, you know, two Brits.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of David Ajala. He was on Supergirl and he was this great villain, very complicated, interesting, dangerous villain. He did a really, really good job. Very intense character.
Everything I've seen of his is really strong. So when I interviewed Jonathan Frakes, and the way he talked about Ajala was so effusive, and he described him as a movie star, I think we could see him as a major movie star.
Oh, yeah.
How many actors have we said Shakespeare training really helps when you're trying to do Star Trek because of the same kind of, you know, it's sort of different and it's specific language and, you know, you have, it just, it helps. And
right,
so cause
even if
makes
you,
sense.
Yeah. Cause even if you don't understand, like, you know, when I can hear someone say lines from Shakespeare and it just sounds like old fashioned words. And then you can hear someone do the lines in a way. I mean, I've seen Patrick Stewart do it on stage. And he conveys all the emotion and complexity of what's being said with the way that he delivers it. And they have to do the same thing with their technobabble because exactly. They have to sound like they know what they're talking about and make you feel like you know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even just the technobabble. It's just sort of the Starfleet way of talking or thinking, you know. It's all like that. Yeah.
Although this character of Book is a very different, he's not a Starfleet type person.
No, he's definitely not.
He's a 32nd century Han Solo, apparently. So, but we don't exactly know his whole story, but I'm sure he has some technobabble as well, I guess.
Sure.
1 week from now, we'll be able to talk a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah.
When the first episode airs on the 15th, and our first podcast about it will be on the 16th.
It's crazy to think we're a week away.
Crazy. Before we get into the finale of Lower Decks, there was a little bit of Picard stuff this week. It wasn't part of the panel, so there was really no discussion of Picard at all. But I did an interview with Brandon Braga, who's written more Star Trek than anyone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the showrunner, or one of the showrunners, on Voyager, and he created the character of Seven of Nine, and I had a chance to talk to him about, and he dated Jeri Ryan, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
For about 4 years. So he's very close to Jeri, and he's very close to the character of Seven, and I asked him what it was like to see Seven come back 20 years later. And let's take a listen to what he had to say.
I'm going to go back a little bit because you mentioned Seven in Voyager. And so I'm just curious, have you had a chance, you know, you created this character, you brought in Jeri, who you are friends with, obviously. have you had a chance to see her work and Seven in Picard? And what's it like to see your creation in this entirely different context?
Yeah, I've seen some of it. I haven't seen all of Picard. Obviously, I was very curious. And, you know, it's thrilling to see a character live on, and I'm really happy to see Jeri step back into the role. And, it's fun. You know, obviously, the character that they're depicting is very still traumatized from her experience, and And, you know, sometimes I think, well, I was thinking, well, she doesn't quite sound like Seven to me. But then again, this is a character that's, you know, been through a lot in the intervening years. So, and there's a bit of me that feels possessive. But at the end of the day, I'm really happy that her character continues. And people are interested in her because she is a great character. Mainly because of Jerry. Jerry's brought that one to life.
So, you know, I think that's really lovely because it must be, I mean, you could read in between the lines. It's a little hard for him to watch, I think.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
makes sense.
Because he said he feels possessive. So there's, on one hand, it's like he's proud that for Jerry and he's proud that the character's living on, but he created the character. And so it must be a little hard for him to see other people write for this character that he created and wrote for 4 years.
Yeah, that has to feel a little weird. I liked a lot of the other stuff that he said in the interview. Like I thought his opinion on Section 31 was interesting. But what was, I mean, you spent some time talking to him. So what was sort of the rest of the conversation like?
It's very relaxed. Talking to Brandon is always very relaxed. And what I find interesting about it is he's very introspective and he's really willing to, and in a way, he's very self-critical, I find. Which is odd because so many Trek fans get into nitpicking the Berman and Braga years. Mm-hmm. And I think he's harder on himself than any.
Oh yeah. He's super hard on himself actually. Like,
I mean, we brought up Sub Rosa because I know you guys on the shuttle pod love to talk about Sub Rosa, and he thought it was great that we were scrutinizing it. And he was making fun of his own writing, and he said all the writers made fun of him, like about some of the dialogue he wrote in that. So, you know, it's great to talk to someone. I mean, he's had so much success. He's won a Peabody Award. He's, you know, the Cosmos is fantastic. Orville is fantastic. I think I remember talking to Brandon years and years ago, and he didn't have the same confidence he does now, and he was. He was almost paranoid about the way fans treated him online and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. People were very nasty. They blamed him for a lot of stuff. And there was a lot of anger. Like, it was very charged.
Yeah.
Yeah. True.
And I think he's kind of come through all that. He's had a bit of a catharsis where he can accept all of that. And now that he's had so much success with all of these other shows, I think he can put his Star Trek time in more and better perspective, and it doesn't weigh him down when he looks at the criticism. And now he could see people kind of praising all his work. And I mean, you know, Voyager's really had a lot of a resurgence. I think people are really learning to appreciate the show, and it's got great Netflix ratings. And of course, Seven's back. So, you know, I think he's feeling somewhat vindicated. I don't know if that's the right word.
Well, I think also when you see all the negative stuff about Discovery, and there's negative stuff about Picard, like all the negative stuff towards New Trek, maybe he's realizing, oh, people are just going to, there are always going to be people who don't like what you're doing and who are angry about it. And so maybe he's also accepted that that's part of fandom, and maybe he's taking it less personally.
I hope so.
I think that's the key, is that he's able to look at it objectively now. And
a lot of time has passed.
Yeah. So he's a great interview. I look forward to the next time I interview him. So
I was just going to recommend that people go read the whole, there are two parts and more going on.
If you haven't read it, it's worth
it. Yeah, it's good.
Absolutely.
So I think that's pretty much it for the news. In fact, that was quite a bit for the news.
Yeah. I mean, I could just keep talking about Janeway, but I'll restrain myself.
Okay, so you guys ready to talk about the season finale of Lower Decks?
Sure.
Yeah.
No small parts.
No small parts.
I can't so believe we're at the season finale already.
Yeah, that actually was quick, I feel like.
Yeah, it did really fly past. Faster than the 10 episodes. I mean, 10 is short, but 10 episodes of Picard seemed to take longer than 10 episodes of Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Well, technically it did.
Yeah, it's true. It did, yeah.
Because it's longer, yeah.
Well, Matt, you are our guest. So why don't you start off? What did you think of the episode overall?
I really liked this episode, I gotta say. I enjoyed it pretty much from beginning to end, which isn't always true of like every episode this season. I thought they really knocked it out of the park for their finale, which Mike McMahon kind of teased, you know, before that he really liked the last few episodes, and I agree with him. I thought it was great.
Lori?
I thought, well, they definitely made it feel like a season finale with tons of action, tons of high stakes, lots of consequences. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a lot. There was definitely like more action, I think, than they've had for a while. But I liked the pace. There were lots of things that I thought were funny, lots of visual gags. And overall, it was like a big action thing to go out on. Maybe not my favorite episode, but fun. How about you, Tony?
I agree with most of that. I've always talked about how I like when they take risks, and they definitely took risks in this episode. And they paid a lot of stuff off that was coming. In a way, it was it's certainly the most serialized of the whole season.
Yeah.
I don't think you could have watched this episode as a standalone. I mean, you really, for the first time in the whole season, you kind of had to know what was going on to really appreciate it. But I think that's okay for a season finale. It was an excellent, excellent episode of Star Trek. But I guess as we'll be talking, as we're going along, sometimes I feel like maybe it wasn't as funny as some of the other episodes because they were making such great Star Trek.
You know what I think it was? I thought there were a lot of sort of visual gags and small things, but there weren't as many lines, like dialogue lines, that made me laugh out loud.
See, that's funny. I think there's plenty of lines in there that gave me a laugh. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't agree with the whole premise, Tony, that it's like not funny because they were making sort of TNG. I think there was room for both, and I think it worked quite well. But I guess we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. Sometimes we change our minds by the end, so we'll see.
Yeah, how it goes. Yeah,
that's true. We'll so you'll have to convince me. But I mean, it started so it really started as serious as a heart attack. I mean,
oh yeah, it's very serious in the beginning.
I mean, I love the. Well, I mean, the very beginning is great. We get to visit, you know, an old planet, and it's just, you know, Easter eggs and breaking.
Oh, sorry, the Solvang on is very serious. Let's say.
Right. So the visit to Landru was great.
Yeah.
I like that there was a sign hanging on it that said, "Do not obey."
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I guess we'll have to how did Landru, did they fix it or did he fix himself? I guess.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I thought Landry was basically destroyed, right? I mean, we all thought that, I think, at the end of
It was sparks and smoke destroyed, not melted down.
True, not like melted, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, he regenerated somehow.
Or somebody got curious and hooked him back up, you know, and like, whoops, you know.
but, it was fun, but it did set up a very important theme for the episode.
It did, yeah.
Yep.
This whole thing about something that I think a lot of Star Trek fans have talked about, which is whatever happened to this planet or that planet. I mean, go ahead.
No, you go with that. I'll jump in.
So. Well, I mean, the most famous one is, obviously the gangster planet. And
talk about like totally dropped off, right? Like in theory, they're supposed to come back annually to collect their cut. Remember?
And maybe pick up McCoy's communicator.
And maybe stop that whole thing from whatever was going to go on with that. So,
well, here's the funny thing. So I sometimes write for the official Star Trek site, and I have an article waiting to go up. They're just behind on publishing. That is a list of episodes that I wanted follow-ups to. And one of them is the Gamesters of Triskelion, which she does give a shout out to this episode. Yeah, where I'm like, who knows what happened next? So I can't even remember. I wrote it so long ago now that I don't remember what else was on the list, but I definitely remember that was.
But certainly, I mean, it doesn't take long for us I forget if it was before or after the opening credits, but we visit a brand new ship and it gets destroyed. Another California. I mean, how many California classes, by the way? I've lost count, but I think
apparently they're the cannon fodder of the 24th century fleet now.
Huh? Yeah, but I think that's at least four that have been lost, right, this season.
I can't recall. I think two, I haven't been three. Tracking. Yeah,
but this time was the first time I think that you know we saw the ship go and everyone's dead. And
it's no joke.
Like so, we're 5 minutes into a comedy and we just saw hundreds of people die. Hundreds of
Starfleet people. It reminds me of like TNG season two, like Contagion, when the Yamato just blows up in the teaser, basically, or not the teaser, but almost the teaser, like early into the episode. It's bad, you know?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of episodes where that start out with the ship being destroyed or a planet being destroyed of the other series. Like TOS did it.
Sure.
But we got to kind of know these people. This is our second visit with this captain.
Captain Deaton.
Yep.
Yeah, she has a little personality and, you know, she's really enjoying her new ship.
Yeah, everybody goes, you know, in their sock feet.
I love it. That was great. Their shoes on.
Yeah.
I mean, and everyone could relate to the piece of plastic peeling up.
Yeah,
keeping that new car smell kind of thing going on. You know, it's like the whole.
So we're having some fun with them, and bang, they're dead.
Yeah.
So, which is daring, but you know, I think okay. And then we find out, of course,
who? Yeah.
The Pakleds.
Yeah. Like, wow.
You know, I mean, because you're thinking, oh my God, is it the Borg or is it you know something, some new thing they're going to introduce and. They grab the biggest joke. I think this is a kind of super meta thing. They're like, what is the jokiest joke adversary? And it's the Pakleds.
It's the Pakleds, yeah.
And then they actually say the line, looks like they're not a joke anymore.
Yes. Yes, they do.
So they really hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. And but they haven't gotten any smarter.
No. They've just gotten their hands on a lot more tech, apparently.
Right.
They felt a lot. The new Pakleds, or the same Pakleds, are almost like the Borg. They've adopted the same thing, except they're not assimilating people. They're assimilating technology.
So like the Borg when they were first invented in season two.
Yeah. And they seem to be just as successful, right?
I mean, apparently they were quite successful. Yeah, it's actually kind of shocking how successful they apparently were, because it's not just that one ship, because what, two more show up, right? Mm-hmm. That are hulking beasts that have obviously successfully integrated lots of other.
And they were all different in their own way.
Yeah, all different, which is cool because they, you know, they would be hodgepodge, of course.
Right. Now, if you were paying attention, the Kallus system is Pakled territory as established in the Next Generation.
It is? Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So why didn't they know that they were at least... Everyone seemed to be surprised that the Pakleds were here. It's like, well...
I think the surprise is that they're this crazy hulking ship that with like, you know, clamper arms and crazy stuff that no one expects that, you know?
But also, when they say we have a distress call from the Kallus system, the captain says, well, there isn't anything distressing there.
Oh, true. Yeah. Once again, underestimating.
Yeah.
Right. So she, you know, which implies she knew it was the Pakled system, but she's like, wow, like that's a problem.
Right. Exactly.
So nobody took them seriously. That was what they learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I still think that it was a smart thing for them to take that back. And it's kind of almost saying something about this show. Cause I almost feel like this whole episode is taking something funny and making it a little bit more serious.
Yeah. Certainly with a lot of death, if that'll do it.
So the other thing, of course, going on throughout the whole episode is this, usually what is the main focus of an episode is Mariner, what's going on with her.
Right.
Although in a way in this episode, and this gets back to the Next Generation thing, I think for this episode, the A story is the A story. And that is the issue with the Pakleds and the battle and all that.
Yeah.
That the, the Mariner story is strong, but it is a B story, just like it, you know, used to be in the good old days. Her character story.
And all the stories were woven together, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's actually hard to kind of pick between those two as A and B. It's almost like A1 and A2, you know what I mean? They did
right.
It, yeah.
But indeed. But this wasn't a it's all about Mariner
episode. No, it wasn't. And I think that was nice too, actually.
Although, yeah, the whole thing with going on with her and Brad. In our last podcast, we were talking about how Brad knows the secret and is he going to be upset or freaked out? And it occurred to me as soon as this episode started and we saw them on Beta 3, it's like, of course Brad loves it because it'll allow him to suck up more.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yeah.
It's more brown nosing for Brad. He's like, I've got an in now. So,
yeah,
you know, that was the obvious answer that we didn't come upon last week.
Right. Well, just as he needed some time to think about it, so did we. Because he was freaked out and he couldn't even talk to the captain when he first found out.
Right, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so it took him a little while to realize the advantages, and when he gets comfortable with it,
like, I love where he's like, does your captain mommy give you sweet little captain kisses, you know, like, I was dying with that.
Right, and, but unfortunately, he ends up telling the whole crew accidentally.
Which brings up a thing that I think you guys were talking about this on your podcast.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know,
how did the badge?
Yeah,
like, how can it receive?
How's the badge know?
How can it be used for eavesdropping? Like, there were so many. I was like, so they're trying to contact him, and he hasn't responded, but they can hear everything
but
that
it's
he's
open?
Saying.
Yeah, huh?
Right. Which is, you know, I guess the question is, it actually makes sense that badges are smart enough to turn on, and perhaps the bridge can override it. But what's the whole point of the tapping on the badge? Because really, the badges have some kind of AI in them.
I think they've sort of, if I remember right, they've worked their way around that, saying that the tapping is a tactile thing basically for the human users, but like, it's not necessary at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the TNG tech manual described it as something like that. That like, it can activate on voice commands. Tapping is just like, you know, another way to interface with it, but it's wholly unnecessary if you didn't want to, you know.
But it raises a lot of questions about if, you know, is somebody always listening to everything that you say when you have a badge on? Like,
yeah,
that's
it certainly
little...
does.
I mean,
yeah.
Badgie, we know Badgie was now.
Apparently Badgie was, yeah. Little jerk. Like, yeah.
Badgie is always listening.
Yes.
Always.
So apparently everybody is always listening.
Damn.
Yeah.
I know.
But it wasn't just Brad. Everyone wants to suck up to Mariner.
Oh yeah.
And so it's her worst nightmare.
As soon as you know, yeah. As soon as you know, now you're going to get treated differently. Like,
yep.
And so she, which results in her rolling down her sleeves after 10 episodes.
Yeah. And changing her hair. I liked that little move with the hair.
I was confused. I think everyone's going to be confused by the fact that Mariner said that Brad technically outranks her, but here's why I think that's maybe true, is that she was bumped back down to ensign, and therefore Brad has more seniority because she was bumped down to
and he's on his way up and she's on her way down, basically. Yeah.
Yes. So even though they're both ensigns, he has more seniority as an ensign, perhaps. He's
I wasn't sure if it was that literal or if she was basically trying to get under his skin a little by saying that, you know.
Oh, both.
I mean?
Yeah. For sure, both.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is confusing because they're both ensigns. But but the whole thing of getting promoted and getting off the ship and all that, which has been his obsession. And so that was an interesting dynamic between the two of them. And I thought that kind of paid off for the whole season with their story, even though it wasn't the main story this time. And it was funny too. There was some good humor there.
Yep.
What'd you guys think about the whole Tendi story?
I sort of like that I didn't go back to look, but when the exocomp showed up, I think it reacted exactly the same way she did when she first got on the ship, right?
It did.
Didn't she
it did.
See that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was exactly the same. I thought that one made me laugh a lot. I thought that was cute.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
And the name alone is like hilarious. So
peanut hamper.
Peanut hamper. Yeah.
It is mathematically the perfect name, apparently.
Apparently. Yeah.
I like, I mean, it was knocking over the little test tubes and it had some issues and she was jealous of it, but she loved it. So I thought it gave her something fun to do.
Yeah. And I recognize, I don't know if you guys ever watched You're the Worst, which is a great FX series. It's over now, unfortunately, but it was a great FX, like sort of dark comedy about relationships. I recognize the voice actress immediately. She's from that. Her name is Heather Donahue. So I was like, oh, I know who that is.
Oh, yeah. I think I watched like the first season of that show and she did sound familiar.
Yeah. She has a fairly unique voice, but like, it's good, you know, it's sort of sweetly, like she knows how to be sort of like kind of almost ridiculously sickly sweet, but also with an edge to her. So, which is kind of her character in You're the Worst, because she's kind of a jerk, but like idiot, but also well-meaning. So yeah, she does that.
I thought it was Kristen Schaal.
Oh no. Oh, Kristen Schaal's a little bit different. Like she would have been a good choice too, but yeah.
Except I always notice her. She's so distinctive that I always just get distracted that it's her. Yeah.
Yeah.
She does maybe too many things, too much voice work, perhaps. No, that was a good, a great callback to, and again, this is one of those things of, well, if these things are sentient, then now what?
So they get to be an officer because they're sentient. They're not a tool. She's an officer.
So this episode was definitely doing a lot of that, well, if this happened, then what happens next kind of stuff over and over and over again. And that was, I thought a good theme, and they certainly did have fun with the exocomp. And we saw, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, but Mike McMahon and John Van Sitters were joking about how hard it was for Mike to hold himself back from bringing the exocomp in to episode 10. Because, you know, it's like, that it's a perfect thing for Mike to just want to do that right away. Okay. Now, I really enjoyed the Rutherford kind of C or D story. He did have a lot to do, you know, to do in this episode, but...
Well, he saved the day, at least for a while.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It all had to do with his glitching implant.
It's funny, though, because it wasn't glitching. That was what I thought was especially funny, was he discovers all these modes, like more modes. I want a list of all the modes.
You do? I have it right here. Hold on. It is, because I freeze framed, it is extremely optimistic, sexy, passive aggressive, Klingon, holiday spirit, British, cowboy, sassy, weird, sleep, bro, and hot take.
Nice.
Hot take.
Sassy was the one that made me laugh the most. Yeah,
sassy was good.
Even though it went by quickly. But what I thought was funny was that it was very sort of old-fashioned tech, the way he had to cycle through it to get back to normal. Like, right. It wasn't that it was glitching, it was that he had to keep going through it until he went all the way back around, which seems like it would not be a setting on an advanced piece of technology.
I think it was more shuffle mode, because he started at extremely optimistic and then he went through to a few and then ended up back at extremely optimistic. And then had to, so I'm not, yeah, I think it was either shuffling or he went all the way around and accidentally passed normal again. So right, he eventually got back to normal.
It's like when I'm trying to set my alarm clock, because I still use like an old digital clock.
And you go right past
it. You go past and you got to go through the whole damn thing all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But Rutherford was called upon to save the day, because they decided, when they ran out of options with the Packlets, to go with the Independence Day solution, right?
Yeah.
Well, they tried getting a peanut hamper to do it, but that didn't work out so well.
Yeah. She's not a very good officer.
No.
Although she's now, well, I guess she's not dead, but
marooned of sorts. Yeah,
she could totally come back. Things do come back.
I don't know. Maybe she's going to become a Packlet or something. So she's in Packlet space. They'll eventually find her, right?
Yep.
So
they do look for things.
But this did let us get Badgie again. They had to trust Badgie.
Yes, which of course, like, you know you can't trust Badgie.
No. Yeah, you knew that was going to come back on them pretty as soon as you saw Badgie and he asked to have his...
The safeties removed or whatever? Yeah, I was like, that's not a good idea.
And then he said, you're not going to kill me anymore, are you? And he said, I'm Badgie.
Yeah. not an answer, by the way. Yeah.
I guess he can't lie.
He's like a politician.
Yeah.
I'm Badgie.
Good old Jack Marrera, man. He's so good at that.
Yeah, no, he's perfect. And it's funny because as distinctive as his voice is and as many things as I've heard and seen him in, I still don't lose the sense of whatever character he is. No, like, it's still Badgie to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although proving that they know how to cast him for the right roles, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is probably the end of Badgie if we're to assume.
Yeah.
Well, that's an itch. I guess, did Badgie die?
No, I think that's just a copy of him. That's when the virus, right? So I think Badgie's still around.
Right, because they seemed to leave him behind when they left the holodeck. So yeah, so it is just a copy of him.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're not going to trust him again, are they? But who knows?
Yes.
Apparently, yes, yeah.
Apparently they will.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, this episode was full of callbacks to, even though, you know, it was obviously callbacks to the original series, The Next Generation, but definitely full of callbacks to the rest of the show.
Oh, yeah.
When the Packleds come on board and they don't have any weapons, suddenly Mariner reveals all of her contraband stash. Weapons.
Yes.
Some of which we saw in episode one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think I made a complaint either on the podcast or in one of my reviews about the shuttle they're constantly working on. And I'm like, what's up with the shuttle? Are they going to ever fix this thing? And now it's fixed, right?
So sort of. Enough, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And they gave it, they like hand drew a name, the Sequoia, on the side.
They drew little pictures on it, too.
And teeth?
Yes.
They drew teeth.
Yep, yeah, they drew teeth and they drew, there's like a little, almost like those bumper stickers I see of like the stick figure families on the back of people's cars. That's what it looked like.
Oh, I missed that. That's
there
funny.
Was a drawing on I'm the sure side of it I'm that sure looked they did sort that. Of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you they that was, yeah, I bet you they did.
And even Peanut Hamper's tour of the ship was, I think, the same. That Tendi got.
Yep.
So yeah, there was just a, you know, and we talked about the Solvang was the Rubidoux crew. So They were referring to themselves. Already.
Well, yeah, and I mean, at the end, they mention going to Tilghana 4, which is, of course, where they were in the second episode.
Yeah, and that Shax is still calling Rutherford Baby Bear.
Baby Bear, yeah.
Right. And they mentioned that Tendi made a dog, and they stole the T-88.
Yeah.
And Ransom showed off his Kirk Fu again.
Yes. Yep.
So yeah, it's essentially the entire season kind of wrapped up in one thing in a way.
I think they at least grabbed one thing from every episode to refer to, just one little bit everywhere. And you know, and there were new things. You know, the collection of stuff that we saw hidden by Mariner. I don't think we saw some of that stuff before.
No, because
like,
we definitely like didn't see
the Spock helmets.
Yeah, that was awesome. I'm so glad they worked that in there.
I feel like somebody was probably waiting the whole time for a chance to work that in somewhere.
Oh, you know they were. Yeah, you know they were just like dying to work that in there.
And there was a rapier. Had we seen the rapier before?
No, that's right. Brad picks up a Sulu sword, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one of those ice knives that the Andorians use, which we saw before, but we didn't.
And there was that thing that I don't know if it has a name, but it's like the thing that almost looks like a mace of sorts that like Worf sometimes uses in his calisthenics program. Like that I've anyway, I can't think of it, but one of those beasts uses it a bunch, and it's just straight out of that. There's a bunch of weapons that are straight out of like this holodeck program, you know, and
those things from Code of Honor, the spiky ball.
Is that still, was that, did we see one of those get used? I know it was in there in the first episode or whatever.
Yeah. But there were a couple of them in there actually.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. So that was fun. There are so many little visual gags in this one that I loved that you could notice or not that made me laugh.
Yeah, they would mean nothing to a non-fan, but they are little bits of joy for all of us fans to enjoy, for sure.
And then there were some big stakes in this one. Besides, I mean, we lost, you know, the whole crew of one ship, which we didn't really get to know them that well, but we lost one of our characters.
Yeah, that was, I was surprised. I was actually really surprised they did that.
I mean, I feel like, I don't know whether they, I mean, she briefly mentioned, you know, we'll have to find a replacement, but I was like, well, I like him. I don't want him gone.
It went well, and really we barely got to know him because they kind of left him one note for a lot of the season. I think this is the most we've seen Shax do something besides be pissed off and want to blow up a warp core. You know what I mean? Like, he got to actually sort of go into action mode and protect his baby bear.
He got to carry people around and run with them, which he seems to like doing.
He does seem to like to do that, yeah.
He did say it was the best day of his life.
Yep. No. Well, yeah, he finally got to do something. He got to blast through the hull of a ship. He got to, like, you know, he got to do
beat
stuff.
People up.
Yeah, he got to be an action hero that he wants to be.
And the doctor really likes him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They really do have a thing.
Yeah,
well,
they do.
He did kiss her.
He did.
Yep, he did.
I mean, I this is going to sound mean, but I hope he stays dead because I like death to be death.
And yeah, I agree. Yeah. They shouldn't do a weird
for
psych,
story's
oh,
sake. Yes.
No. But it's pretty daring. I mean,
we saw his coffin and everything. I think he's dead for real.
Oh yeah, he's dead. I mean, that
you know
up.
What I mean? Like,
yeah,
no,
yeah, but there, you know, there's a million ways, Star Trek ways, to bring someone back, and he could do a cameo as a flashback or on the holodeck or whatever. But
he could have a twin brother.
Twin brother, yep, there
don't,
you go.
Don't resurrect him. Don't.
No, please don't. I agree. You know where I thought that was going at the very end? You mentioned that moment with, like, oh, we need a replacement. I actually thought Freeman was going to say to Mariner, you know, the whole, like, well, we've sort of come to trust each other now. You do things, like, you know, kind of impulsively, but in a good way. You could be my chief of security or something like that. I kind of thought she was going to give her the job. Okay. She didn't, but that's kind of what I thought.
From Ensign, huh? From demoted
Why not?
Ensign, yeah.
Well,
yes.
you put her up to lieutenant, like she did already once in the season, and then, you know.
Well, I mean, I did sort of think that, but now this now ties into something we've talked about before, which is how old is Mariner, and how are they going to keep her as an ensign forever? And in a way, the captain is saying to her, the best way to keep you under the radar to do your new secret mission is to keep you as an ensign.
Yeah, which is true. She's right about that.
So now she has this mission, the captain, of seeing, I don't know how they're going to manifest this, but the captain sees a problem in the Federation of kind of forgetting things and letting things kind of fester on their own that they only visited once. So, you know, maybe we will visit the gangster planet and, you know, some other things from the TNG era. Although,
well, this is the show for the gangster planet for sure. Like, if there's a show to do it on, it's this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there's still, you know, because Ransom said something that was kind of foreshadowing this early on. He says, we can't do that without orders. So they are supposed to be a second contact ship. So they can't just randomly just start visiting these planets.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
So I'm not sure how they're going to work that in, but I guess that's what season two is all about.
Yeah.
But you're right about the stakes. And in a way, this episode felt like a movie to me, in a mini movie. I mean, it had very high stakes, people making sacrifices, characters that they were doing. And it's interesting, you know, last week was a parody of a movie.
Yeah. This week really is a movie. Yeah.
This episode had all the right elements of a good Star Trek movie. Action, humor, high stakes, you know, cameos, and
an ethical,
you know,
question of worked in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
You know, so it was really good Star Trek for sure, and but you know, a little daring, a little surprising that this show killed a major character. I'm okay with characters dying, and maybe we'll have some new interesting fun character in season two.
Well, he's the Tasha Yar of this show, right? Security officer. Yeah.
We should have seen this coming all along.
Yep.
And you know, Armis got a name drop in this episode.
He did.
So I'm not sure if those are connected, but yeah, interesting connection there, though. Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. They're rather clever, these people.
You know, that goes into how something we were talking about. I mean, they were playing the long game, and there's something we haven't talked that much about, but there was a few weeks back, I said, how could you possibly name drop the Titan and not mention Riker?
I was thinking about that when we saw, because we also saw the Titan, and I was thinking about that because of you.
Yeah. And as soon as we saw the Titan, we knew it was coming. And there he was, red alert. So Riker, and Deanna, of course, because she's on the ship. And it was fantastic. They were playing the next gen music.
Yeah, the hero. It was very heroic music because they came to save the day.
It was very Star Trek First Contact.
Very First Contact, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the Enterprise shows up to save the Defiant.
Yep.
But I do have one quibble here, which is this is kind of a technical quibble and a show quibble, which is, so when they showed up at the and were surrounded by the packleds, they said they couldn't get a distress call out because they were being jammed. So the question is, how did the Titan know to come? And also, basically, right before the Titan showed up, Mariner's plan wasn't working. I mean, they got rid of one ship, but they were then surrounded by three ships, so they were all going to die.
And she was telling them to get in their escape pods. She was ready to abandon ship.
Yeah, and they might have survived because the Packlet seemed more interested in the technology than the people, but still, it wasn't working, and then the Titan shows up, and they were essentially saved by the Titan, and it would have been... I wish somehow our heroes at least... You know, Brad or someone figured out how to get a message out that they showed that our heroes at least triggered the saving of the day, as opposed to just being saved in the end by the Titan. Because the show is about the Lower Decks crew, and in the end, Next Gen had to come and save them.
Well, I mean, they are the second string, so the first string had to come in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it sort of it's in keeping with the theme.
Yeah,
I guess I've grown to love these guys, and I wish they pulled it off on their own. Even though it's great to see Frakes, or hear Frakes, and Marina, and see the Titan and see it canonized.
Yeah, that's right. It's canon now.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there was no way they weren't going to use that. I mean, that you know,
of course,
Eagle Moss has sold models of it, and. It's been on.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. Like CBS licensing has made it official long ago. So this just makes it screen canon.
Although there's elements of the books that they didn't bring over. Tuvok is supposed to be on board somewhere. And there's a Saurian they made as the first officer. I don't think that's who the first officer is in the books. So, you know, obviously they have flexibility.
Yeah. Well, as we know, the books are the books.
Right. Right. Exactly. But they did bring over a lot, and the Titan was pretty cool.
Yeah, although Riker was very sort of loose, you know. He was just all about like contraband and wanting to do fun stuff and not very serious, which, you know, Riker is kind of serious.
I mean, when he has to be, he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't. It's true. He felt more like Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
Than
yes.
Will
yes.
Riker.
Yep.
He was a lot more. And I guess the conceit here is now that he's no longer under the thumb of that tyrant, Jean-Luc Picard, he's loosened up. You know, he's married. Yeah, he's a whole new guy, even though. You have to remember, this is just a year later, right? This is a year after Nemesis.
Well, so. They were also trying to set up that he's... I mean, not only are he and Mariner friends, but he's like her because he viewed Freeman as, you know, he was her mentor and Chadich, and they brought up all that same stuff that Mariner said to Boimler.
Right. Yep. Although Freeman isn't sure that's how she remembers it, but there's definitely a connection between the two families.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all canon. So Riker knows the Freemans, and knows Myrner very well on a first name basis, which Brad was like, oh my God. And you wonder, how did he not know that? But.
Well, how would he know that?
How would he? Yeah. Myrner only reveals what she wants to reveal.
Yep.
Yeah, fair enough. But it is his dream job, so he's obviously obsessed with Riker.
Oh, yeah, Pike. Super jealous that they're on a first-name basis.
Right. Which is, so, I feel like, also what happens when Frake shows up on set, and the people who know him are, the people who don't know him are jealous of the people who do know him. I feel like that probably happens in real life, too. Because he's so loved on those sets.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So, the way it all wrapped up, as every episode does, very neatly on the bar, which we still don't know the name of. Does it have a name?
No, but they keep calling it the bar, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I've called it 10 Forward by accident, but it's just the bar.
Yeah. It's definitely not forward of anything. So it kind of seems like maybe it's a square in the middle of the ship or something. Like it's really not clear where it is.
And I think every character had a nice ending of their arc.
Well, Brad has a beginning of a new arc.
Yeah, Brad has he had an end and a beginning for sure.
Right. Well, he was always obsessed. And they again, the long game, some episode 3 or 4, they mentioned that his dream job was to be on the Titan.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's on the Titan as a lieutenant. It's everything he ever wanted.
Yeah, and he's the expert, because he's like, oh yeah, I've been there. I know what it's like. I can show you around.
Yeah.
He was set to sassy mode.
Right. He has a whole one pip, and he's suddenly Mr. Confident. Though it was a little... I mean, I guess the question is, he revealed that he was afraid of losing his best friend, Mariner, and her going off on another ship earlier in the episode. But him getting a promotion, he seemed to be, I don't know, is he faking it? Because he seemed to be kind of okay with just leaving Mariner behind.
Well, I think it's his dream job, so that won out. I'm sure he's not, like, thrilled about the no Mariner part.
Well, he's afraid to talk to her, so
there's
an element of guilt there or something.
Yeah, for sure.
The Tendi and Rutherford storyline's a little weird in that they literally reset Rutherford back to the beginning.
Rutherford got a reboot, literally, there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was Voyagered.
they get to be best friends all over again.
Yeah. There's nothing phases Tendi.
No. Seems not.
That's what I like about her. She's just so damn cheerful.
It's interesting, though, because, like, they sort of had, as we, you know, you guys have talked about it, and, like, we've seen it, they have a little bit of, like, a romantic thing. Not a lot, but, like, there's a little bit there. But then, in that simulation last week, it kind of looks like Rutherford, I'm not sure if he actually has the hots for Billyips, or he just really, really, really thinks he's great. You know what I mean?
We think they were, like, into each other.
Yeah, I think so, too. Like, not that this is a binary thing. He can be into all kinds of people, but it's just interesting of like, oh, well, who is he really into? And maybe with this whole starting over thing, like maybe he's not going to be into Tendi as much and he will go for, you know, communicating how he feels to Billyips or something, because he's sort of a different person now, right? Like it's like version 2 of himself.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have the implant anymore.
Right.
I imagine... That's a good question of they could just give him a normal eye. I think Mike in my interview revealed that the implant was a
choice.
But I think he, I have to re-listen to that interview. I think he implied that he still has the implant in season 2, but I don't quote me on that.
Could be like a new version, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect it's part of his character. I suspect he'll have a new, better implant. So that's pretty much the episode. It, you know, let's talk about some of our favorite lines and funniest moments.
Oh, there's so many lines that I liked from this episode, I have to say.
What were your favorites, Matt?
Okay, so the obvious one is Ransom's attraction to Mariner is kind of highlighted in a very obvious way, right? Where he's talking about being hard on her, and he's like, "Oh, I'm only hard on you when you make me hard," you know. And it's like, "Whoops, Starfleet HR, everybody, where's?" But, you know, that's the obvious one. But the one I really loved is when they're talking about Shax, you know, in memoriam. Well, wherever he is, I'm sure he's full throat screaming in someone's face and ejecting a warp core. That was freaking great. I just love that.
Also, did you notice with Ransom, speaking of that line, that he then covered himself with his pad?
No, God, I missed that. That's
it just reminded me of boys in high school with their blinders. Yeah.
It is. he is a high school boy in many ways. Yes.
Yeah, he put it down to cover himself.
Aw, poor Ransom.
Anything else? We've actually said a lot of mine, so I won't repeat them, but there are a couple of other ones. I liked the moment with the hand pies, and that one of them was key lime, which I thought was particularly strange.
Yes.
And there was a funny little thing at the beginning where Mariner obviously doesn't know what a compass is because she called it a spiky pencil turnaround thingy that she was giving to the kids.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. She doesn't know what it is. Yeah.
Which I thought, why would she? And then the only other, you know, I'd mentioned the sign hanging on Landry, but also it was roped off Landry.
Yes.
So those were my big ones. How about you, Tony?
It had it was crime scene tape, except it was Starfleet tape.
It was Starfleet. It had deltas tape on it. Yeah.
And, actually, that was one of my favorite lines was in that scene. That scene was the funniest scene in the whole episode, I think. When she turns to Landru and says, "Don't make me paradox you into destroying yourself."
Yes, that's great line. Great line.
That was really good.
You know, because she'd already had mentioned Kirk, and that's such a Kirk thing. So,
and then it says, "Landru apologizes."
Mm-hmm.
Landru has learned some lessons, apparently.
And I also like that one guy's like, "No, I still want to go crazy during the red hour." And they're like, "No, dude. We're done with that. Stop."
Yeah.
He's like, "But I just bought a new sign." Yeah.
That's right. And he calls it purging. That's right. He calls it purging, hitting it on the nose that, you know, the movie franchise, The Purge, is very influenced by this, you know, the episode.
Yep.
The Red Hour.
Yeah.
There was a very brief moment when they cut to sick bay and they're bringing Freeman in. And Dr. Donna just hisses.
Yes.
Yes.
And then she has to gather herself and put her on the bed.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
And another great Ransom moment when he goes, "I'm setting my fist to stun and my
kids." Oh God, I loved that. That was good. That was funny.
I also liked Mariner's jilty little walk that she was imitating Boimler when she started doing her jilty walk.
It's like a little power walk thing that they do. Yeah. Yep. It's great. Also, let's not forget the Ransom officially makes the term TOS era canon.
Yes.
Right.
And she's like, "TOS, what the hell do you mean?" He's like, "Oh, those little scientists." You know? That may be almost two on the nose, but I still chuckled at it.
It was way winky.
Yeah.
Super winky. Yeah. Kind of like Brad humming the theme to
True.
Which also happened in the Turbo Lift. So the Turbo Lift is where they go full on fourth wall breaking, I guess.
I guess so.
One thing I noticed that I like in the Turbo Lift is that they actually make the light change, you know, as if they're going up and down levels, that they actually do that in this show.
As they should.
Yeah, it's well done. Again, they still manage to get the look of it just right.
Oh, speaking of cheaping out, it just made me think of, they have that picture of TAS Kirk and Spock on a pad being like, oh, they've been here before. And of course, it's the TAS versions because, it's animated. So of course, it should be that version, you know?
Yep.
So that was great.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about connections. So are there any kind of deep cuts either of you noticed that you really liked in this episode?
Well, I liked mentioning Captain Freeman Day.
Yes.
That was nice.
I guess every captain does that on their ship.
Yeah, I guess so. Can't just be Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the conspiracy theory guy was funny.
Yeah.
Changelings aren't real. Dominion War never happened.
Yeah, Wolf 359 was an inside job.
Yeah. Oh, and Riker saying that he was just off in the holodeck watching the first Enterprise.
Yes.
Oh. They've had a long road getting from there. I was like, that's almost like kicking someone when they're down.
I know.
Like, I mean, of course, it's like, I know everybody who was sort of involved in that choice regrets it.
Yeah.
For the Enterprise finale. So, but it was just kind of like, oh, you. Yeah.
Too soon?
Yeah, you guys. Yeah, it was like that.
I don't know. I felt like they were trying to rehabilitate it. Like, you know, hey, Riker, he really
does like him. Yeah.
He really does like the Enterprise guys. He checks out that holodeck all the time.
Yeah, frequently. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
One thing that is not a direct anything, but just sort of reminds me of something is the Pakleds, their new like scary helmets and stuff reminded me a lot of the JJ versus Klingon designs, but like they had the helmets and stuff. I mean, it's not exactly, but it's in that kind of vein.
I think one of the ships that showed up later had JJ versus type nacelles. Although they were the wrong color, but they definitely felt Kelvin-y. The kind of giant, oversized nacelles, glowing nacelles. But, yeah, they could have been anything. But still, those ships were kind of funny, the way they were hodgepodge. And if you looked when Boimler was identifying, you could see little markings. So there was a Klingon part, a Romulan part, a Ferengi part. Bajoran part.
I think Bajoran,
There was one symbol I didn't recognize, so that might have been new, or I just didn't recognize it. You know, I think we've covered all the deep cuts. There were some visual moments that I thought were homages. When the ship was damaged, it looked a lot like the Reliant limping away from Star Trek II. Subtle stuff. I since you noticed it, it probably was, I guess. And we know now that the Rikers have more than one Horgon.
Yeah, I like that. Which Horgon should we bring? Like,
the big one or the little one?
Yeah,
that's not a surprise, I guess. And I guess this also established that the First Contact uniforms, the uniforms introduced in First Contact and also then used on Deep Space Nine, are still in use.
Yeah.
I mean, it is only a year after Nemesis, so you'd think they would be, right?
Right. So I guess what we're seeing here is that because the uniforms that are worn by the Cerritos and all the other California class ships, we've also seen it worn by the Parliament class people.
Oh,
so it's not a California class thing. And the Admiral, who talks funny.
Oh, yeah.
He is his Admiral version of that.
The Censors guy.
Yeah, Censors.
Right. So I guess the question is are the uniforms optional? Is it by ship?
I think it's a lot like the original intention for how the Deep Space Nine uniforms were supposed to be working. Like, they were supposed to be for people getting down and dirty in a grimy space station, and then people not on the space station got the nice Mandarin collar uniforms. That's originally the intention. Then, of course, they just decided to adopt them everywhere because, whatever. So I think it's that kind of thing. But, because we saw Mariner wearing the First Contact style uniform when she was on the Keto too. So apparently if you're sort of top of the line, you get that. But if you're like second string, not so much.
Right. Although that could have also been because it was in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That's true. We don't know how much in the past it was, but yeah.
This is a Mike question of, are there any rules to this? Or is it simply that people are used to seeing Riker in that uniform? And we're just going to keep him in that uniform because he might look silly in the new uniform.
I don't know. I think they would have all looked fine in the new uniform, honestly. So I don't know. I do remember that one time somebody asked that. I think it was back in 2019, though. Somebody asked him and they said, like, well, what are these new uniforms? Like, are they like canonical? Like, why did they change or whatever? And he said, well, let me put it this way. You would expect someone on a California class ship to be wearing that uniform. So it almost sounds like he's thought about that, that it is some ships, but not all of them.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, the writer's room are, I mean, obviously they are really thinking about these things.
Yeah, for sure.
Separate from uniforms, did you notice that when Boimler went to the Titan, he brought his Boimler effect plaque with him?
Yes, he did. He's very proud of that, even though he doesn't like it.
Yeah. That was one of the things he had out on display.
Yeah.
There was actually another thing, which I'm not really sure what it was, but it looked like he had a collectible plate with Ransom's face on it.
Yeah, there was something like that. I don't know what that was. Yeah, you're right.
It was way in the background, so I'm going to have to do some freeze framing and some zooming in, but there might be a story there, or maybe not.
Who knows? Well, remember, I mean, they did sell an awful lot of very cheesy collector plates back in the day.
I thought it could, maybe it was supposed to be a Riker plate. Like, it was like, because he's obviously into the Titan, but
it looked like Ransom, you're right.
So
I have to go back and look.
One last thing before we sort of leave this episode that I wanted to point out is I like that the Packlets all called, like, basically every ship was the Enterprise to them.
Right.
That's all they know.
They just knew about the one.
Yeah, they just knew about the Enterprise D or whatever that they encountered with Geordi, I guess. And then that's it. You know, like.
So all Federation ships.
All Federation ships, especially if they have a saucer, you know, it's like, oh, that's the Enterprise.
Right.
Oh, no, that's the Enterprise. Like
another Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly, we've kind of covered the episode. I still feel the same way about the episode. I liked it. It's a great Star Trek. Thought it could be funnier.
Huh. I think it had the right amount of both, considering that they were trying to make a tie-up, you know, for the whole season.
Yeah, I think the more we've talked about it, the more I've realized how many funny things there were. And for me, I liked that it wasn't, that there were a lot of visual things. There was even one where, When Boimler finds out that she knows Riker and he sticks his face into the corner of the view screen, all that stuff was just funny. There's a lot of small stuff in there. Like, I feel like you could watch this episode 10 times and find something new in it each time.
I'm sure you could. It is worth a rewatch for sure. Not just for the callback, but because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
It's a solid episode of Next Generation era for sure. Yeah.
They packed it in.
So, season one, is it everything you wanted it to be and more?
Good question. I was pondering this all day trying to figure out how I was going to answer that. I don't know if it's everything that I wanted it to be and more, but it's definitely like met expectations. Like, I've been really happy with it. I always sort of believed in this. Like, I know some people were very, you know, concerned, especially the whole like, oh, it's Rick and Morty guy, we don't need Rick and Morty, and it's not. So, and I never expected it to be, because if you've ever read the TNG season 8 stuff that Mike did, it's loving, you know, it's a loving parody of the TNG era, and he gets it. And so that's mostly been evident throughout this season. So in general, I've really liked this season. I have there's some ups and downs personally. Like, I think Badgy personally got a little too dark and a little too extreme for my taste, but that's really, you know, there's a few little nitpicks here and there, but like, otherwise I really liked this season. And I was going to say, I think you could make a pretty good argument. This is one of the most successful first seasons of a Trek show ever. Nothing beats TOS season one, but it's really quite a successful first season, I must say.
I wouldn't argue with that. I think it's an excellent first season. And it was, to me, everything I wanted it to be. And it was what I sort of expected.
Yeah.
But I had very high expectations. I always talked about how I was really, really looking forward to this show. And I was not disappointed in any way.
So I was one of the nervous people. Because we live in edgy times where everyone likes to be edgy and dark. And I was just definitely, I have family members who watch Rick and Morty, and I can tell that it's smart and funny, but it's just not quite my thing. And so I was definitely worried about it. And I think from the first episode, I was fine. As soon as I saw the first episode, I just thought, oh, this is the right attitude. It's really smart. It's layered and rich, and it's joyful, even when it's dark. I mean, I don't mind. you know, I thought all the zombie stuff in that first episode was funny. I thought Badgie was funny. So I don't, you know, there's, I guess there are kinds of dark that I like and kinds that I don't. Yeah. So, but if it's funny, if it's really, really funny, you can get away with a lot in my book. And I just, it has far exceeded my expectations and given me a great sense of relief as well.
Yeah. I mean, Rick and Morty is very like nihilistic and Star Trek shouldn't be. And so far it isn't. And
that's what I was worried about.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there were a few moments where things got a little too dark. I still go back to the moment where they tried to kill Brad, all the freaks on the...
Yeah, I actually have problems with the whole freak storyline personally. I don't think that's very 24th century of them to have a freak like ship and a whole freak show, you know what I mean, like kind of thing going on. It seemed very antiquated, this concept, you know, of sort of freaky people. But
the big question there was, were they going to go stay on that planet or were they going to get cured on that planet? So that,
right.
That was the question. Because
there's a cure available. It almost seems like they're being put out to pasture there, you know, like,
yeah. Cause what, I mean, let's say that you suddenly had 27 eyes, but couldn't you still do your job?
I would assume so, perhaps better than before.
Right. So why were they being kicked off their ships? And, right. Yeah. So there was a lot. It was fun. I loved the episode.
The episode itself was like a hoot and like really good otherwise. But I thought that was way too mean spirited for like the future, you know, that we know. People shouldn't be that biased against people who are quote unquote freaks. In fact, the word freak wouldn't even have like a meaning at that point, I think, you know, it wouldn't be used.
Right.
Yeah. I did think that was a misstep, but I mean, the episode itself was pretty damn good. If you ignore that, it's just like that part kind of bothered me.
My biggest issues with the show are when it gets too reliant on references and when references are just references and there's no joke there. And it's okay if like some of the stuff in this episode where things are happening fast and a fan may notice something that's funny, but the scene isn't relying on you noticing that to be funny because there's something else going on. But there are some instances during the first season where the whole joke is something that you need to know. And if you don't know it, it's not funny. A little too winky, a little too fourth wall. And they've kind of balanced it out in most episodes. I thought this was very good, this episode for sure. So I think they're getting better at it. But there's been some episodes where they, you know, weren't so good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how season two, where they go with season two, both in like the whole, treading that line and both plot wise and how they do that kind of fan servicey line, you know, where, because they were, like you said, they were getting really good at it, I thought. Kind of the right amount.
I mean, we do a whole article on the Easter eggs and references every week.
Yeah.
And some people comment, oh, this show, you know, the whole point of the show is that. It's like, no, that's why I don't make them part of the reviews, because we review the episode and then we're like, oh, but here's all this extra stuff.
Right.
And it's fun.
But yeah, it's not relying on that stuff to carry the show. It's just it's just like a whole bunch of tiny little presents for Star Trek fans who are watching.
Exactly.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because like I said, like I've watched a few episodes now with my son and husband who are not big. My son has probably watched more Star Trek than my husband at this point. They're not huge Star Trek fans, so they don't get a lot of the inside stuff. Occasionally they do. And they're laughing their asses off. So it definitely doesn't need that stuff. It doesn't rely on it. And the broad references they get and the visual ones, for sure, they don't.
Right. I think that pretty much does it for Lower Deck Season 1 and for No Small Parts. We'd like to end the show with something we call Trek Bits, which hopefully you guys are regular listeners and know. And let's go around the table, even though we're not at a table.
Nobody's at a table anymore.
Yeah, we're all socially distanced. No tables.
No tables.
Let's start with you, Matt, since you're the guest.
If you guys, readers of the site, saw that my review of Picard season one just went up earlier this week. And so I spent a bit of time kind of in the 24th century, both in Picard and then, of course, for Lower Decks. And so it got me thinking about the really great blog that's not as updated as they used to, but it's great fun, called Fashion It So, which is a great, you know, it's a pair, Charlie and Anna, that are both sort of into design and fashion, and they love TNG, you know, having been growing up on it. And they used to, they're not doing it as much, but they would take apart the insane, like, kind of 90s idea of future fashion in all the TNG episodes. You know, all the things that look like they belong from, like, in a hotel lobby drape or something, you know, that people are wearing. It's a hoot. And so if you've not looked at it, go through their archives. Like I said, they're not doing a lot right now, unfortunately. I wish they would. I mean, like, they were excited for Picard because they saw the fashions, but they haven't really done anything with it. But it's a hoot to go through their archives of just, like, their commentary is just great. And it just, you know, now that we're sort of back in the 24th century with both Lower Decks and Picard, like, it just made me think about it again.
Cool. I don't even know about that one.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's a hoot.
Fun.
Lori, what's your...
So mine is, I was listening, it's usually a podcast with me, but I like the podcast Three Questions with Andy Richter, which is very guest dependent. But there was an old episode that I was listening to that had Scott Thompson on it. So just for anyone who doesn't know, although you all should, who Scott Thompson
Shame.
Is.
You should know who that is.
Well, man. He's one of the kids in the hall. I mean, look, I grew up in Toronto, but they're very famous comedy, great classic comedy troupe. He was on the Larry Sanders Show. I guess he was on Hannibal, which I don't watch. He's done a lot of stuff. But so I'd never actually seen him talking about Voyager before. And then suddenly he brings up Voyager on this podcast. And he talked about how Brian Fuller and Brandon Braga gave him a kind of role that he really wanted because he was an out gay man. But so he never got straight roles. And he just really wanted to play, like, just a guy, he said. And he said the only time in Hollywood he ever really played a straight guy, he said, was on Star Trek Voyager when they gave him this great role. And then he was joking. He said that he played a monk with a giant blue head. It was the Voyager episode, Someone to Watch Over Me. So he's like this monk-like ambassador who ends up indulging in food and alcohol and
things.
Hitting on Seven and all this stuff. And then I'm going to have to swear to say this part, but because I'm quoting him. But he said that the only way that Hollywood would let him be heterosexual was to make him incredibly unfuckable. Which was by putting a big blue head on him. So, but he was, like, really, really grateful to both of those guys for giving him the role. And he said it was a total thrill. And I would say the whole episode, I just find him fascinating. And he grew up with all these hockey playing brothers. Like, he had a really interesting upbringing. But it's really fun to hear him talk about it. And the fact that he was so positive about the experience and so excited that it was such a change for him. And then he is very funny. So, go listen to Three Questions with Andy Richter.
That's cool. That's cool.
Excellent.
I didn't really think about, you know, that for him. I just remember him being on Voyager, you know, but I didn't really, you know, think about it.
Well, it's funny because, you know, there's a lot of talk about representation and we think about these things a lot, but usually a lot of gay actors are forced to play straight roles and are longing for the chance to finally play a gay role. And for him, he played a lot of gay roles and was very excited to get to play the straight role.
Yeah.
So that's funny also. And he's just funny. Tony, what have you got?
I've got a YouTube channel from a guy named Michael Moore, who used to work on all the Star Trek shows in the TNG era and Enterprise, and also lots of movies. And he's a prop maker, and he has this YouTube channel called Propology 101, and it's very nerdy. It's very insidery, behind the scenes stuff where he just picks one prop that he made in his life and goes through how it was made in excruciating detail. And so he's got a few dozen videos up. It's been up for about a year. And so you can see how, like, the Jumja sticks were made, or phasers, or the rules of acquisition. And it gives you insight of how they were used on set. And if you want to learn how to make props, but it also is just a fun way to learn more about the shows. And he's had a couple interviews. He had Rick Sternbach do a little interview.
Nice.
So it's very, the videos only have like dozens of views. So it's sadly,
oh, that's a shame. Yeah.
Underappreciated, maybe 100 views, 200 views here and there. So hopefully more people check it out, because it's a great channel called Propology 101. Certainly for anyone who wants to learn about the business and learn about prop making, it's a must check out channel.
We'll see if we can get those numbers up.
Yes, indeed.
I'm just going to go watch the thing about the Jumjust stick over and over.
And that's pretty much it for All Access Star Trek for this week and for our coverage of the first season of Star Trek Lower Decks.
That is crazy. We've already done a whole season of a show, and we start with Discovery next.
Woohoo.
In just 1 week, we will be reviewing and discussing the episode 1 of season 3, and we will continue through the first 13 episodes, or all 13 episodes, of the third season of Star Trek Discovery on All Access Star Trek.
Wow.
Is third season the charm? Tune in to find out.
Exactly. I would like to thank Matt for joining us from the Shuttle Pod.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
This was fun.
Our first crossover episode.
That's right. It's a crossover.
Right.
We'll do a musical crossover next.
Yes. So, and hopefully not the last. Please come back next week and find out what we have to say about the return of Star Trek Discovery.
And don't forget to leave us comments and feedback so we know how to make the podcast better just for you. And that's
it. Thanks for listening. Matt, do you have a goodbye?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Oh. Goodnight, Gracie. Yeah.
Goodnight, Matt.
Bye, everybody.
Goodnight, John Boy.